The spirit of performance defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com. The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
My mission is simple: to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Help people make friends. I'm just trying to make a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate, explain all that's going on. So call me, 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me, Jim Cramer. The non-believers, they've had the microphone. They'll never stop hating this market, will they? And days like today, with the Dow slipping 98 points, S&P dipping 0.112, and the Nasdaq declining 0.41%, well, all it does is encourage them. Look, we are due for a pullback. I've been saying that. We have a very high cash position from our charitable trust. Members of the CBC Investing Club know all too well, particularly from our annual meeting. But we like this market the whole way up. Many of the critics hated it the whole way up. First, they hated it because we were in some sort of pandemic-inspired inflationary cycle. Then they hated it because of the mini banking crisis that started this time last year. Oh, they hated it because the Fed was ruthlessly raising rates and they saw the economy headed for a hard landing. They hated it because, oh, so much of the market strength was concentrated in the Magnificent Seven. And now they hate it because of what they call the AI bubble. All along, they failed to celebrate the market's incredible victories. They ignored the end of high inflation. They ignored what sure feels like the end of the Fed's tightening cycle. Not only was there no hard landing, you could argue the plane never really had to land because of all that job growth that's been so strong. And they didn't even care when the Magnificent Seven started bifurcating and passed the leadership baton to the industrials and the broadening rally of small and mid-cap stocks, which are still cheap after making yearly high last week. So I gotta wonder, what the heck's wrong with these people? Why can't they never admit that the market deserved a rally, even if it might go down now? Everything that happened so far has made a lot of sense to us, and I think the AI move we're seeing is actually perfectly logical in the context of worldwide tech growth. First, though, let's just focus on the fact that it's an election year. The Supreme Court just certified that former President Trump will get the Republican nomination in a walk. That removes a lot of uncertainty about this election. Oh, sure, there are other prosecutions, but we have an overwhelmingly conservative Supreme Court, and I bet they can kick the can down the road on anything that might interfere with the election. That matters to the market because, like him or hate him, Trump's arguably the most pro-business, pro-stock market president in history. Hey, he uses Dow Jones Industrial Average as his approval rating. President Biden is much less friendly to big business, to put it mildly, frankly. But in fairness, the political agenda of throwing trillions of dollars in infrastructure has been a major boon to a huge number of companies, especially our beleaguered industrials that are so terrific. With that out of the way, let's deal with the so-called bubbles head on. Now, the first of the obvious bubble that they never seem to talk about, the haters, is not in the stock market at all. It's crypto, which has no real underpinnings when it comes to its actual worth. However, its relative worth versus the U.S. dollar is palpable. People view crypto as a hedge against potential inflation brought on by sky-high national debt. But when we actually had high inflation, crypto performed horribly. Doesn't matter. People still think it's a hedge against inevitable inflation from the government. And we've gotten to the point where there are exchange-traded products for Bitcoin, and there'll be some for Ethereum as well. And the hedgers are out in full force. It makes sense. Meanwhile, it feels like there are no Bitcoin sellers. That's what's bubblicious about it, even up here. So I can see crypto continuing to rally. Just remember to jump ship if inflation really does spike. Hey, by the way, the bump up in gold confirms the bull in and pull out of crypto. See, crypto is moving every speculative asset that's a hedge, because gold above 2,000 is speculative. Next, how about the non-bubble, though, in artificial intelligence? Let me start by saying that, sure, there are some stocks in the AI cohort that are overinflated, but that doesn't mean they can't go higher. See, I didn't really like that the Supermicro got added to the S&P 500s. That one's just blowing through levels at a pace. Makes you think it's stealing something really highly proprietary, and that's not the case. Supermicro can and does have competitors. But let me tackle NVIDIA, up huge today. Now, it's the third largest company in the world with a valuation worth of $2 trillion. For a very long time, I've told you to own NVIDIA, don't trade it. I actually get called out in the street now a lot about it, which is really terrific. I like that. And I named my dog NVIDIA when the stock was about a tenth of where it is now. Why not trade it? Well, simple. The valuation's too low. And don't just look at today's price earnings multiple. That doesn't help you. I want you to think of it like this. Wall Street expects NVIDIA to earn $24 per share this year. I think that's a lowball number, but let's use it. Well, that number, the stock does look a little pricey, selling for roughly 35 times this year's earnings estimates. But now let's go back a year ago. A year ago this week, at that point, NVIDIA, the stock, traded at $238. And there were many people who hated it and thought it was incredibly overvalued. But it was only overvalued because the earnings estimates turned out to be way too low. Do you know what it turns out to be? It's only selling for 10 times the current estimates for this year. That's right, when it's at 238, 10 times. We just didn't know they'd give us so many upside surprises. Now go to October. The stock stood a little more than $400 per share in retrospect. It was still selling for less than the average name in the S&P 500 when you look at 2024 estimates. Over and over again, it turns out NVIDIA's been selling at absurd levels. Crazy. Absolutely low. So if NVIDIA keeps trouncing the estimates, then I bet it ends up looking cheap once again. Now, isn't that the opposite of a bubble? Okay, now let's take Jensen Huang at his word, right? I mean, don't you think he deserves his word? He thinks the entire digital world is going to be turned upside down by generative AI, not just servers, not just the data centers, not just the PCs, not just the factories, not just the autos. I mean everything. This is what's really going on. We don't even know how big AI is going to be. We get bits and pieces from a Meta or an Amazon or a Microsoft or an Alphabet. We know that last week Dell talked at length about what can happen when you get all the NVIDIA high-end H100 chips you need. We'll know that Broadcom, they're going to address it on Thursday. AMD, a genuine rival NVIDIA, will be talking to it at HP conference. These are all tremendous companies benefiting from the commitment to AI. It is undisputed that NVIDIA is the king of AI, and it's undisputed that this company has repeatedly surprised the upside. So let me ask them, how the heck are we supposed to value it other than against the estimates? And what do the bears keep? What do they have? What is their edge? The third alleged bubble, these GLP-1 weight loss drugs from Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly. We have a worldwide epidemic of obesity. Just last week, the authoritative British medical journal, Lancet, raised its estimates for the number of obese people on the planet from 897 million to 1 billion. Diabetes is at epidemic proportions. Fortunately, we have reasons to believe these GLP-1 drugs lower hypertension and help with fatty liver disease on top of treating diabetes and making you lose weight. I think these are the most important new class of medicines since maybe antibiotics. How are we supposed to value them? It would be insane for Eli Lilly to have a cheap stock here, but the bears want us to make it cheap. We can't. Now, what's typically the case is that we do get a sell-off. I'm ready for it. We aren't all that overbought. The trusty oscillator says that. We aren't in bond trouble, but we do have a labor report on Friday, and I'm still expecting a strong set of numbers, which is not what Wall Street wants to see. Strong job numbers could take a summer rate cut off the table and cause some serious concern that might lead to a sell-off. We see what's happening in Apple. That looks like it's rolling over. You know how I feel. Own it, don't trade it. I'm not fretting. I'm just expecting, and I have my shopping list of what to buy on weakness for the Chapel Trust. You are never set for a big decline unless you are net short. We can't short stocks for the Chapel Trust, but we have raised a lot of cash. And you can see that when you join the CNBC Investing Club. We make everything public before we do it. But the bottom line, I will be ready to buy if this market sells off. Not immediately. I'm not going to be like that. I don't take the first bite. But the haters, they'll be ready to show scorn. They'll say, I told you so. I say, thanks for nothing. You didn't tell us anything. Just raise some cash and be ready to do some buying if and when the market has its inevitable pullback after this incredible run. From November of 2023. Ed in California. Ed!
Hi, Jim. This is Ed from Yreka, California, and I've been on your club from the very first day we could sign up, and I love it.
Thank you so much. We work our butts off. I really appreciate that. There's a man who knows how hard we're working. Thank you, Ed. Thank you very much.
What my question is, with this new drug that Lilly has for diabetes, and as you know better than me, it curbs the appetite or desire for food and alcohol beverage. How's that going to affect Constellation Brands?
Okay.
Short term, long term.
Okay, it's a great question. Now, here's the fact is that beer sales have not been hurt. It hurts the hard liquor, not as much beer. We don't know why it doesn't act as negatively on beer. We think it's just because beer tends to have a social component that that hard liquor doesn't have. We're eyeing it, we're watching it, but it does not seem to have the impact that it has on what we call the browns and the clears. Let's go to Sandy in Arizona, please. Sandy.
Professor Kramer, how are you?
I'm doing well, Sandy. How about you?
Fine. I was a little kid driving in my uncle's DeSoto. Boy, we're going back some. I saw this big Cadillac, and I said, gee, Uncle Joe, wow, that's a great car. And he turns to me and he says, those are for other people. Mr. Kramer, you are, through your wisdom and tutelage, for the rest of us, we're becoming those other people. And I thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Holy cow, these callers are making me feel good. Working so hard yesterday. This is great. Let me go to work for you, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay. I'm a retired data security director worldwide. I opened up my platform this morning, and what I saw at Palo Alto Networks just made my blood run cold. Basically, Palo Alto is facing a gaggle of lawsuits. There's a verdict of $152 million. An investor is suing them over a big share tumble. Three law firms are suing them over violations of security, fraud, and so forth. Is Mr. Nikesh not telling us something?
No. These lawsuits are all, I'm going to say it point blank. I see these filed every day, anytime a stock falls. And I want to just say, someone, please, some judge, somebody stand up and say, look, we got rid of this when Al Shugart got this, changed the law years ago, worked so hard to make it so that at the beginning of a conference call, these people don't know what's going to happen, have to just say it. And yet these law firms never stop. It's a disgrace. It's a national disgrace what those law firms do. A disgrace. All right, I will be ready to buy if this market sells off. The haters, they'll be ready to show scorn and say, I told you so, I told you so. I say thanks for nothing. Mad Money Tonight, with crude prices seeing two straight months of gains and natural gas seeing its fourth straight monthly loss, I'm getting the bottom of what's really happening in the energy sector with the CEO of Coterra. Then we're at the time of the year where I like to take a look at the top dividend boosters, the S&P 500. Are there any fits for your portfolio? I'm highlighting the top 10. And Nextracker is one of the best performing IPOs of 2023. So what does this solar company have in store for this year? Do not miss my exclusive with the CEO. So stay with Kramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
It's been a little over 2 years since Russia invaded Ukraine, caused the price of natural gas to skyrocket, because Europe gets 40% of their natural gas from the Russians. After that initial spike, though, the price has come down hard, over 80%. It just keeps getting hit. Meanwhile, oil's up almost 10% over the same period. But even though natural gas is the commodity had a tough time, some natural gas producers are doing a lot better than others. Take Coterra Energy, the Houston-based oil and gas producer that was created when Cabot Oil and Gas merged with Cimarex back in 2021. In the past, Qatar has been more natural gas oriented, but a couple of weeks ago, they reported a solid quarter, better than expected production, in fact, huge free cash flow numbers. At the same time, management said they'd be cutting back on investments in the gas oriented Marcellus Shale. Price too low. They have the flexibility to pivot between oil and gas, and that is huge, people. But don't take it from me. Let's check in with Tom Jordan. He is the chairman, president, and CEO of Qatar, big position for my travel trust, to get a better read of the situation. Mr. Jordan, welcome back to Mad Money.
Afternoon, Jim.
Tom, this is when your model shines. I mean, there's some people who are in nat gas and they're getting hurt. People in oil, they weren't able to take advantage of nat gas when the prices were higher. Talk to us about how great the pivot is for you and how you know better than to be patient and watch for the recovery gas macro, because missing a few months of the recovery is much better than fully participating in the downside.
Jim, thank you for noticing. You know, we built Coterra to have flexibility of top-tier assets, low cost of supply, but also a team that is nimble, always looking at iterations and ready to pivot. There's another element that's critical, and that is that we've built our service contracts so we don't have many long-term commitments. And that means we can move capital from one basin to another in fairly short order, as we did with our recent release. We feel pretty solid about where we stand.
Now, one of the things that I think people don't understand about oil companies is they tend to be very episodic. The idea of getting a six-month projection is really hard. Whereas you get a consumer packaged goods companies, they give you pretty steady dividend increase. You know what you're going to get. They give you a two-year outlook. You're giving us a three-year outlook and giving us a return of capital. We can really budget. Our individual investors can budget Coterra like they would be any great consumer products company.
Well, because of our asset quality and also organization, we can project a stability of revenue and stability of cash flow that gives us that luxury. We can never predict commodity prices, at least maybe there are those that say they can. I've never known anybody that could. And so we keep our debt low. We keep our assets low cost of supply, and really build an organization that can capitalize on it.
Well, let's talk about the scale of what you're doing in oil this year. Now, you told us last year, look, you can't just pivot in a quarter. But it seems like that you're going to be doing, with this, with the couple rigs you have, a huge number of wells are going to be drilled. I know you don't gauge toward production, but the possibility is that you could have a really bountiful year if oil stays high.
Well, we always hope for that, Jim. You know, we don't manage a company by production growth. We manage it by capital allocation in the most profitable places we can invest. But we've just got some tremendous projects in our oil assets, particularly in the Delaware Basin, where we have these large projects that really give us capital efficiency, economies of scale, and set up the future quite nicely.
One of the things you pointed out in kind of a, well, you have a lot of jocular moments in your call, many more than everybody else, but you know, the Journal has a story every weekend about these companies merging. Now, they happen to be very fine companies. I happen to like Diamondback. I like the acquisition. You know, I like Chevron. I think that nobody's better than Sheffield other than you. But, I mean, aren't they getting a little carried away? I mean, all these mergers, are they spend enough time thinking about this?
The real question to ask yourself on any transaction is, what's better, a share of the company you have or a share of the combined company? And we've looked at a lot of potential combinations. Everybody has. But we feel pretty comfortable where we are with our inventory duration, our low cost of supply, and our ability to execute nimbly. We're always going to be opportunistic. We'll always be curious. But we like where we sit right now.
Now, a lot of the commentary about the Permian is that it's peaking out. I just don't see that, but I rely on people like you to tell me about whether it's more bountiful than a lot of these journalists and a lot of the, I would say, the armchair critics say.
The Permian Basin has been described as a very forgiving basin, and believe me, it's forgiven us a long time. And what, you know, we find that with a emphasis on technology and innovation. And Jim, you know what a technology business oil and gas is today. Right. We find that we continually push the margin, we continuously improve. And I think we're going to see that for some time to come.
Now, the Anadarko, it's not an aggressive ramp up, but a lot of people are very skeptical. You apparently see this, and I know you told me this last year when I was in Dallas, that Anadarko could be a very bountiful area.
Anadarko is tremendous. It's high pressure, great quality rock. It also has natural gas liquids. So in addition to the natural gas, we have natural gas liquids, the butane, the propane, the ethane, and so on, that really adds to that revenue stream. It's a tremendous place to operate, and we've got some really nice things to do there.
In the meantime, I saw EQT. Look, EQT is a really good company, but they cut back too. I imagine you're watching all these people cut back. There'll come a moment we'll get some cold weather or maybe something, unfortunately, I hope doesn't go on wrong in Russia, but you will be able to ramp back up much faster than the other guys, correct?
Well, time will tell. I think we're well positioned. As we announced in our plan, our production will decline single digits, 5 or 6% this year. But we have contingency plans to ramp back up if things look better. The thing, we've taken a little different approach. We've never been able to make sense out of shutting production in. What we want to do is not invest in future wells. At least put a pause on that and redirect that capital to other assets.
Are you surprised that natural gas has fallen as far as it has?
Well, I am. But, it's simply until we get more LNG exports opened up, we're in the weather business. And we didn't have the kind of winter that we've had the past few years. And storage is in good supply. So, this is just part of managing the business. And that's why we have the ability to pivot from one asset to another. This is kind of what we are designed for.
And then last question, are you surprised that when an OPEC does something like they did extending the cuts, that it just doesn't seem to matter anymore?
Well, OPEC is still going to be underwriting oil prices for some time to come. But I think there's been a psychology of supply in the global marketplace that people just don't worry about it the way they used to. I mean, there was a day when any shock in the Middle East, and Lord knows we've seen lots of them, would have made a huge volatile change in the price of oil. And to be honest, Jim, that's a credit to our industry. I think we've created that psychology of security of supply, and we're going to continue to do it.
Well, you're a big part of why we have energy independence and have security more than we've ever had. And I want to thank you, Tom Jordan, Chairman, President, CEO of Coterra, just doing a fantastic quarter, and I think it's going to be a great year for you. Really great that you're on the show.
Thanks, Jim.
Talk to you soon, Tom. Thank you. Mad Money's back in for the break.
Coming up, investors crave dividends, and these companies are putting their money where their mouth is. A special year-to-date dividend delivery next.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Every year around this time, I like to take a look at the companies that have raised their dividends the most in January and February, because a major dividend boost is a fabulous sign of strength. Companies don't boost their payouts unless they're feeling very confident in their ability to make good money in the near future. And we now have the official logs of which S&P 500 components have raised their dividends in January and February. That's courtesy, by the way, of Howard Silverbeth. Thank you, Howard. He's the senior index analyst, product management at S&P Dow Jones, who meticulously maintains this data. So far, 104 companies in the S&P 500 have boosted their payouts this year, on average by 8.5%, and 30 of them raised their dividends by more than 10%. Within that group, I looked them over, and you know what? I decided to give you my top 10, share it with you, so to speak, because I'm in a benevolent mood today. All right, let's start with a company that put through the biggest dividend boost year to date. Can you believe it? Charitable trust named Walt Disney, which hiked its dividend by 50% after suspending its payout during the pandemic. Disney only reinstituted it late last year, and now they're raising it substantially, although it's still barely more than half of what they were paying before COVID. So I got my fingers crossed there could be more ahead. Still, I see this as a real sign of confidence from management. Same goes for the $3 billion buyback authorization. Disney strung a couple of solid quarters together and now says it's on track to deliver $7.5 billion in annualized cost cuts by the end of the year, up from $5.5 billion in the original plan. Of course, there's also the proxy fight with Nelson Peltz, legendary activist investor. But Peltz is so good at what he does that I think he would be happy either way. I have this big white paper that just dropped. I don't know for sure when Disney holds its annual meetings in early April. Look, that's one of the reasons why we stuck this one through thick and thin for the Chapel Trust, even as we did tell you that we did let you down by believing. Now it's coming back. The second largest dividend boost came from Lennar, with the Cramer fave home builder raising its payout by an astounding 33% in January, on top of a $5 billion increase to its buyback. Remember, this is in the middle of a Fed tightening cycle. The home builders had a miraculous run over the past couple of years, despite much higher mortgage rates. They're cleaning up because we've got a massive housing shortage in this country. And Lennar is run by the bankable Stuart Miller, is among the best operators in the group. These guys report next week. I bet it's going to be a good one. Next, I like Monolithic Power Systems, which is a semiconductor company that makes specialized power chips that are maximized for energy efficiency. Now, they put through a 25% dividend boost when they reported about a month ago. Now, I don't know Monolithic well, but it always seems to pop up when we pull lists of the market's best performers. Definitely deserves more attention. For now, I'll just say that Monolithic has the potential to be a major AI winner. So even though the stock's already run, it wouldn't be surprised if it got more upside if you look at Supermicro, NVIDIA, you know what I mean, AMD. Next, there are two restaurant chains that made the list of largest dividend boosters, and they're really exciting ones, frankly. Domino's, which raised its payout by nearly 25% last month, and then Yum Brands, which put through a 10.7% boost back in January. Domino's has finally gotten over its post-pandemic hangover under the extraordinary leadership of new CEO Russell Wiener. They delivered a stellar quarter last week. Stock's still down more than 100 points from where it peaked in 2021. I think it could revisit those highs over the next year. As for Yum Brands, the parent company of KFC, Taco Bell, and Pizza Hut, they actually had a disappointing fourth quarter report in early February, but stocks still rallied. And that was because Yum offered a strong full-year forecast, saying the international headwinds they've been facing should improve over the course of 2024. Oh, I believe in Yum. How about number five, Sherwin-Williams, the paint company, boosted its dividend by 18.2%, and this one intrigues me. Home Depot recently told us that consumers are doing a lot of home improvement projects, but they're shying away from big-ticket projects that require financing. Well, maybe that means they're just repainting a room instead of completely redoing it, meaning more sales for Sherwin-Williams. And man, if the Fed ever starts cutting rates, home building will boom, and these guys will clean up. Next, a little twist here, kind of exciting. Westinghouse Air Brake Tech. Well, it's exciting to me, also known as Wabtec, it's more commonly, that's what people call it. It's stuck in the top 10 with a nearly 18% dividend hike. Not bad, huh? Now, regular viewers know that I'm a huge fan of the railroad industry. I was almost going to press the all aboard button, but I'm staying right here. Even as the individual railroads can be hit or miss, Wabtec's an equipment supplier to all the rails. It's the industry's working. This one should, too. The stock's run from below 100 in late October to 142 today, but I think it's still reasonably priced here. Seventh pick, one I've liked for a long time, MSCI, that put through a 16% dividend boost. That's Henry Fernandez running that place. Now, a couple weeks ago, they were attacked by a vicious short seller with some pretty serious allegations that I, frankly, have gone through and don't believe are ill-advised charges. At the same time, I told you not to bet against MSCI because this is the company that creates global indices that are the benchmark for foreign stocks. Sure enough, when MSCI reported its fourth quarter results, they shot the lights out, boosting the dividend. However, the stock's now pulled back to only 10% from its post-quarter highs. You're getting an opportunity here. Next, there's Verisk Analytics. Really boring, but so what? It increased its payout by almost 15% last month alongside a mixed quarter. Verisk provides risk assessment and decision analytics software to the insurance industry. I told you it was boring, but it's chronically underappreciated, even as the stock seems to grind higher over time. Can the company keep doing well in a falling interest rate environment, which hurts the profitability of the insurance industry? People are concerned, which is why the stock's been trading sideways for over 6 months now. But I'm betting that Verisk will keep winning because their software is just that good and management clearly agrees, or they wouldn't have just given you that big dividend boost. Finally, there's Danaher. Yeah, DHR, the maker of life science and diagnostic equipment. We own it for the Chapel Trust. It was bad. Now it's great. I won't go into the details too much here. I want you to join the club, frankly. And I think you'd like it, for heaven's sake. But I will say that the life science industry seems to be bottoming here. I just checked in with another analyst this weekend about how things are just kind of quietly humming. Danaher had actually lowered its dividend late last year to account for the spinoff of its water business as Veralto. What a winner that's been. But with a 12% dividend hike they announced last month, the full breakup dividend has been restored. I think it's just another sign of confidence from this great company. Here's the bottom line. After going over the 30 companies, the S&P 500, that raised their dividends by more than 10% in January, February, you now got my 10 favorites from that list. I'm telling you, write these down. This is terrific stuff. I think any one of them could be worth putting on your shopping list. And we do get the decline that I'm looking for. And some people are just saying, listen, it's inevitable to happen. Philip in North Carolina. Philip.
Hey, Jim, how are you doing today?
Well, you know what? I am doing well, Philip. Thank you for asking. I want to know how you're doing.
Well, I'm doing what they say down here, down the south, is fair to Midland, Jim.
Fair to Midland. I like that. Yes, I like that phrase. Okay. What's happening?
I want to just start off by telling you that I'm one of the early members of your club. And
oh, fantastic.
This club, yeah, this club is the best in the business, Jim.
Thank you. I'm trying to tell people that Billy's saying, you know, Philip, they always think I'm being too promotional, but you know how much I love it. You see the stuff I pour out on the weekends and Jeff does. We're really, you know, we're trying to kill it here.
Well, that's the whole thing. You don't even have to do it because I'm spreading the word. Anyway.
Well, thank you. That's very kind. I like that. I'm sort of looking at my executive producer. She knows how much I care about this, and she's doing a great job with it, too. How can I help you?
Okay. One other thing, okay? I want to wish a happy birthday. It's a belated birthday to one of your coworkers. This guy reminds me of you 25 years ago, okay? He's downtown Josh Brown. It was his birthday a little while ago.
We love Josh.
He reminds me of you.
You know, Josh is, you know, I'll look up, and Josh is the only other guy who's ever admitted that he ever had a stock that didn't work. That's why I love him. He's the most candid, terrific guy, and I always want to work with him, and I just am so proud that he comes on and just does nothing but great things and teaches, which is fantastic.
Right. This is the way you were 25 years ago. He could be brash and yet respectful, not afraid to tell a CEO that he disagrees.
Oh, you got that right about Josh. He is owned by no one. And that's the highest compliment I can play. Absolutely highest compliment.
Okay. Now, let me get down to my stock. Okay? You always say that never buy a stock on speculation of a merger or a buyout. Okay?
Right.
So I've had this stock for a while. Okay? It's gone down so much that it's almost, it's not even worth it to get out. Okay, I don't know what Mrs. Redstone is doing about this, but should I just hold Paramount?
Yeah, just hold it. Just hold it this time. I think that they're going to have to look. You're absolutely right. The balance sheet's awful. They do really need to do something. My hope is that Ellison might get involved. My hope is that anybody gets involved because that's pulling down the whole darn industry. It's really crushing even near and dear. But anyway, thank you for those kind comments. And yes, belated happy birthday to Josh, too. All right, look, a major dividend boost at this time of the year is a fabulous sign of strength. That's why I think any of those 10 big dividend boosters could be worth putting on your shopping list. Much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with Next Tracker. After highlighting this under-the-radar solar play a few weeks ago, I'm getting a closer look at the story of the financials with the company CEO. Then, it's been a year since the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank, so I'm taking the pulse of the regional banks to see where they stand today. Of course, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Kramer. A couple weeks ago, I talked about a company called Next Tracker, which has a technology platform that helps solar panels move with the sun in order to maximize their energy production and protect them during bad weather. This is a company that came public a little over a year ago with a little fanfare, but after its quiet start, the stock has steadily chugged higher. A month ago, it was trading at a little over $40. Then Next Tracker reported the latest in a string of terrific quarters, with management hiking their full-year earnings forecast, I mean, just gigantically. In response, the stock shot up almost 25% in a single day. Even though the stock's had a huge run, and you know what? I think this one is still worth owning because it is a gigantic winner if the solar industry rebounds as interest rates come down this year. So let's take a closer look with Dan Sugar. He's the co-founder and CEO of Next Tracker. Learn more about what's going on here. Sugar, welcome to Mad Money.
Hey, Jim. Thanks a lot for having us on.
Absolutely. Now, because we need a little Next Tracker 101, because you are the skeletal system of the solar power ecosystem, but people don't understand that there is a skeletal system.
Yeah, and before we get to what we do at Next Tracker, let me talk about the amazing progress with solar.
Sure.
So I brought something, a gift for you, Jim. These are little solar cells that I'm holding here in my hand, okay? Now, in a solar panel, which is about the size of a desk, there's about 75 of these solar cells. If you stack up the cells out of a panel, you can hold them in your hand like a deck of cards. And over its life, this generates the same amount of energy as burning 20 tons of coal.
Jeez.
What's happened in solar is the efficiency's gone up, the cost has come way down. And what we do at Next Tracker is we make a system that helps the solar panels follow the sun in the day and then also adjust with machine learning to real-time atmospheric conditions, generating up to 30% more energy for these
products. Is that how they can give you a big order from Sweden where it's not that sunny?
It's crazy. Solar used to be a Sun Belt thing. Now solar's, you know where the largest project in the United States we're building now is? In Indiana. So because the panels can harvest diffuse light, scattered light, solar is now economic almost everywhere.
And costs have come down, but also you talk in your documents about an incredible level of energy demand in this country and how much solar is going to make of it by 2030.
What's amazing is solar has been the largest single source of new power generation for 3 to 5 years in a row. But what's being forecast now is solar will be the largest source of energy in the United States. And that's being forecast by the Energy Information Administration. And not just here at home. Nextracker is also serving markets in Latin America, such as Brazil, Australia, Saudi Arabia. Right. When Saudi Arabia is doing solar, you know it's
right,
the
right.
numbers.
No, sure, but there's one thing that you, the battery storage system has helped. But a lot of people got burned in solar who watched, not our show because we wouldn't recommend, but they did like the Enphase and the SunPower. You are not those. That is not Shug's thing.
What we're really focused on, Jim, is utility scale solar power. So we support the residential
technology. Corporate.
It's for corporate, like, for example, data centers.
Right.
But also utilities distribute the solar energy through the wires to folks that are in apartment buildings or homes. It can be used by, for example, steel mills. We're powering steel mills right. directly with solar. So these utility scale solar farms are well over half the market, and they're growing at a 26% annually compounded growth.
Now, when I look at your site, I ask everyone to do this. You have, there's things that saves, make it so that you are able to produce more energy. Hail's not a big problem. Hail doesn't destroy your stuff. You've got things that is, gives you an edge over the other guys.
What we're focused on, Jim, is practical technology at Nextracker so that these systems can work and be reliable through a variety of extreme weather.
Right.
So not only are they cost effective, and when paired with batteries, can provide firm power well into the evening when after folks go to bed, but also hold up for the long term, which is why solar is the most strongest new power generation technology
right.
and why Nextracker has focused on delivering on our expectations, why our stocks perform so well.
Okay, so competition, we know you've got an alpha that's up against you, but it looks like you're taking more share, but you have patents. No one can just come in and rip you off, right?
Nextracker has over 500 patents issued and pending. We want all our solar companies in our space to be successful because not only are we lowering costs for customers, but we're furthering national energy security,
right.
energy independence. And we saw the need from that when Vladimir Putin launched this whole war on Ukraine and cut off the gas to Europe. So now what we're seeing is the U.S. is a top producer of conventional energy, but also solar is now the largest form of new energy.
And I know that you have not even had to talk about that. There are incentives coming from the federal government that could help your earnings. Goldman says they're going to really boost your earnings. I don't want to focus on that. I want to focus on your core business, which is extraordinary, booming, with gigantic backlog.
Yeah, we've seen our backlog go up very consistently. We've reported that on our earnings,
right.
and folks can download that off our homepage, because the fundamental economics for solar have never been better than right now. Not only in the U.S., but also abroad, which is why we're focused on serving a global international customer mix.
And why your company is the solar company I am recommending from now on. That's just the way I've said ever since we discovered it. There's really the others are just, they're just not there.
Jim, I hope you have an opportunity to come visit us in Silicon Valley, where we're headquarters, but we also have many offices around the world, and what we're focused on is consistent performance.
Well, I mean, now there, periodically there's political pressure against it, a different president comes in. We still make money.
Look, we grew a lot under Obama. We grew more under Trump. We're growing now because the economics work. This is not about politics.
Right.
What this is about is fundamental technology, just like computers obsoleted typewriters, digital film or digital cameras obsoleted film. Solar is the next generation that's going to obsolete fossil fuel like coal.
Fantastic. That is Dan Sugar. He's the Nextracker founder and CEO, NXT. And I mean it. You know I've been talking positive about these guys. I just wish I had been on it earlier. My bad. But in the 50s, it still represents a great bargain. Mad Money is back after the break.
Thanks a lot, Jim.
Thank you.
Coming up, Kramer takes your calls. And the sky's the limit. It's a fast-fire lightning round. Next.
And then the lighting round is over. Are you ready, Ski? Dad, the light round. Kramer, let's start with Frank in New York. Frank.
Hey, Jim, how you doing? And thank you for taking my call, Jim.
Oh, my pleasure, Frank.
One thing you have that all us home gamers love, and that's integrity. Yeah, we love it, Jim.
It's all you have. Listen, it's actually all you have.
I know. Well, that's all you need.
Thank you.
And you mentioned a stock a while ago, and I've been following it, and I even bought some. And in the market, it didn't like its earnings. It sold off, and it's come back some. But it's not doing as well as somebody that's in the same business. Confluence laying there, and Nutanix is flying. When is Confluence going to get its mojo?
You got to give it a couple quarters because they had some issues involving their financials. And, you know, on Mad Money, we do not back companies with financials that are not pristine. So we're going to have to hold off there. Let's go to Sankit, New York. Sankit.
Hi, Jim. Nice to talk to you. Wanted to actually talk to you and ask you about your opinions about Supermicro.
Supermicro's gotten too hot for me. I mean, you know, I'm going to draw the line here because we had the company on. I loved it. But it's since almost triple. I got to pull back on this one. This one is too sizzling. Well, you get the point of it. Get the point of it. Okay, that was embarrassing. Let's go to Doug in Alabama. Doug.
Hey, Jim.
Hey.
Look,
what's up?
I want to ask about Chewy.
I happen to think that Chewy is bottoming. I really do. Now, I've been saying that. It's been a 17 forever. I'm sticking by my call that the... You know, right now there's just a low in pet adoption. That's really the issue. Let's go to Jerry in Nebraska. Jerry.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Jim.
Okay, Jerry.
I've heard you say many times, look what the kids are doing or the ladies are doing, and I'm interested in On Holdings.
And you should stay interested because we had a really good piece out today. UBS saying that it's doing really well. I've been saying it's doing well for a very long time, and I'm sticking by my view. Let's go to Michael in California. Michael.
Hi, Jim.
Hi, Michael.
I'm a first-time caller. Wanted to get your thoughts on the prospects of Indy Semiconductor.
The Indy Semi is too late to auto, and I'm not interested or as interested in the auto, in the ADAS, or the, you know, frankly, self-driving. I'm just not there. Just doesn't have the support yet. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, one big bank is looking brittle. But a year after regional banks gave the market a jump scare, nobody seems to care. What gives? Cramer explains. Next.
What a difference a year makes for bank stocks. This week last year, Silicon Valley Bank Corp experienced a hideous run that was so swift it seemed like it could bring down the whole financial system. Almost immediately, every regional bank stock got put through the meat grinder. And it took months for the situation to stabilize. But now we're in a totally different world. Today, for example, the situation in New York Community Bank Corp looks perilous. Stocks at $2 and change, off another 23% today, down from $14 last summer. And what happens? The rest of the banks have been rallying furiously. That's right, furiously. What's different this time? First, recognize that not all banks are created equal. Silicon Valley Bank Corp took in a lot of cash from venture capitals all at once, then invested it where it could be crushed if the Fed raised short rates aggressively. They weren't too prescient. SVB had the worst possible portfolio of the safest possible assets, U.S. Treasuries. And their whole business depended on the success of their Silicon Valley clients. They banked there. They used their liquid pre-IPO shares as collateral. So when the IPO market froze, Silicon Valley Bank had a problem. It was frantically trying to do a recap when word got out that some big investors made a very noisy exit, ensuring that the bank would go under. Second, while many excellent regional banks sold their stocks get pancaked by the Silicon Valley Bank run, only two were closed by the regulators after gigantic outflows. Signature Bank, with an odd assemblage of actual and digital deposits, and a few months later, First Republic, a very good bank known for its white glove treatment for rich people. The Fed allowed J.P. Morgan to buy First Republic for a song. It was a great deal for the government, but a much better deal for J.P. Morgan. But the Fed also allowed New York Community Bank Corp to buy Signature, which was just pure folly. I've been warning people to sell I mean, like, NYCB Frazier's because I didn't like its high leverage or it's not so high lending standards. I don't have the access that the Fed had, for heaven's sake. But you know what? You had a really, really easy red flag here. I'm a little embarrassed by the Fed, frankly. I mean, it always had a well above average yield, which has been the kiss of death for any bank stock. I'll never figure out why the heck the Fed let them buy a truly troubled outfit like Signature. The good news here, though, is that New York Community Bancorp is largely dedicated to apartment lending, which is fine, very strong in New York, and not office lending real estate, which is dismal. Any decently capitalized bank that acquires them should make out like a bandit. I keep thinking that PNC is going to do it. I wish they'd let Wells do it, because it would be fabulous for Wells. I hope the Fed has a suitor lined up, though, because the stock isn't acting that well, put it mildly. What's incredible, though, is that this time investors aren't worried at all about a New York Community Bancorp failure reverberating throughout the entire financial system. They know most banks are actually stronger than ever, which is why their stocks have been able to rally lately. At this point, American banks are probably the best capitalized banks in the world by far. We've jacked up capital requirements endlessly, and the Fed has shown no mercy. By comparison, the once placid banking environments of England, Germany, and Switzerland are now roiled, and even their best operators are much less able to handle the fallout from a fellow bank. China, they could learn a lot from our financial industry, not like our tech industry, but they don't want to. I wouldn't trust the paper that most of those banks issue. Of course, if America had a terrible economy, we might get some contagion from NYCB, because the bank's always taking on the chin when lending's cut back and bad loans spike. But we have the exact opposite situation now. Now the Fed never really lowered the boom on the bank examiners who allowed Silicon Valley Bank to get away with its high-risk bank bond portfolio and loose lending standards. We count on them to do their jobs. I know I relied on them when I told you at the beginning of the year that mistakenly that I like the stock. I own that. I made that mistake. But the regulators were able to contain the contagion of just a couple of other banks. Unfortunately, they were just too darn cavalier about Signature. There had to be a better suitor than New York Community Bancorp, because those guys clearly weren't up to the task. Maybe the Fed was too worried about concentration. I don't know. We're now seeing it. Something might have to be done. So, memo to the Fed from a guy who's hated New York Community Bancorp for ages. Hope for the best, but be prepared this time for the worst. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Drew Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.